Health Digest Help Hotline. Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Wellness Digest. Thank you for your patience these last 2 weeks as we took a little bit of a break. I did a little poll on our Instagram stories where I was like, is anyone else feeling this insane energy right now? Like, I don't know what it was, but I was just feeling so unmotivated, low energy, like just could not get myself to get things done. Just felt like time was moving so fast, had a million things to do, and I'm feeling a little bit more settled now. So I did not want to rush or force this episode. I actually tried to record it once and I was like, I don't like this. Like, this just does not sound like I took my time. So I wanted to redo it and just make sure that it was easy and digestible for you guys. So here I am, round number two, trying again. Hopefully this is better. But yeah, I hope you guys are doing well, feeling good. I feel like there's been a little bit of a shift. I don't know if it's just me, but like, I was, again, feeling just very fatigued and like, just like I was doing a million things at once, but also getting nothing done at the same time. Not sure if that's relatable at all, but that's how I was feeling. And now I'm feeling a bit more settled and like, whew, okay, we can get back to it. So anyways, enough about me and rambling about my energy levels. Today we're going to be doing a Health Hotline episode on food sourcing. I get a lot of people who are like, okay, I understand why I should be buying organic or pasture-raised or regenerative, but like, how do I tell what's what? How do I know how my meat was grown, how my vegetables were sourced? Like, how do I tell when I'm at the grocery store, when I'm shopping? And so I thought I would just do an episode to kind of answer that and also explain a little bit about the different types of farming and just give a little bit of a brief overview of what they are and how they're different from each other, because I think that's obviously the first step in having all of the information to be able to decide which type and which kind of sourcing is right for you. So I'm just gonna like dive into that first and explain the different types of farming and how that kind of connects to the quality of your food. So the first is conventional. And the definition of conventional is based on intensive use of agrochemicals with the main goal being to maximize production. So I think it's really important to note that the term conventional is really time relative, because conventional outside of the context of agriculture just means something that is based on or in accordance with what is generally done or believed. So this term is actually pretty time relative, because what might be generally in accordance today was not what was generally done 100 years ago. So I kind of struggle actually with the term conventional, even in relation to farming, because it's like, okay, yeah, intensive use of agrochemicals with the main goal being to maximize production is pretty much the conventional approach nowadays, but that's not always the way that things were done. That's actually, in the scheme of time and human existence, a pretty new way of doing things, since the Industrial Revolution allowed us to maximize production and do things much faster at a much bigger capacity. So that is kind of also why the word industrial is used interchangeably with conventional. And that usually refers to agricultural operations that are highly concentrated. So you've got lots and lots of animals in one confined space, and also mechanized. So it's not really, not many things are done by hand. Lots of things are done by machinery, very automated, again, to maximize production and make things happen a lot faster. So those two terms, conventional and industrial, kind of use interchangeably. I prefer using the term industrial because, like I said, conventional is very time relative, and it's conventional now, but we're hoping that it won't be conventional in the future, and it was not conventional in the past. So it's kind of like only applicable to today's present time, which doesn't really paint the entire picture of the history of agriculture and of like other options that are out there, because I feel like it kind of, conventional is like that default word where it's like, oh, well, that's just what that's just the way things are done now. And it kind of gives people this like false feeling that like that's just the way things are and they have no other option. So conventional, out. We're not using that term. We're not using that term anymore. Okay, the next type of general type of farming is organic. And we've talked about organic before. We have a whole episode on organic, so I'm not going to dive super, super deep into all of the nuances of it. But a basic definition is that organic agriculture eliminates most synthetic chemicals and other potentially hazardous inputs such as sewage sludge, and then also GMOs. So we've talked about this before, but organic automatically means non-GMO, so you don't need to necessarily look for that non-GMO label. When you see the organic label, it already implies non-GMO. The next is pasture raised. And this kind of just adds in a component of outdoor exposure. Again, we've talked about this. I think we have an episode from our very first season on exposing food labels where we pretty much give the definition of like all these buzzword terms. So if you're wanting more details, go listen to that episode. But pasture raised pretty much just adds in a component of outdoor exposure, meaning that the animals are outside grazing on pasture for a certain amount of time each day. That amount of time differs depending on the certifying agency. And what I mean by certifying agency is that, so for organic, the USDA is the certifying agency for organic. It's the only certifying agency for organic. So it's been that USDA organic seal has been patented by the government. That is an official USDA term. Pasture raised and things like cage free, free range, things like that are not government regulated terms. Those are regulated, sometimes not regulated at all, but regulated by varying certifying agencies that are sometimes affiliated with the government, sometimes not. So it depends on the certifying agency. They all have different requirements for how much time that animal has to be outside to be considered pasture raised. So that's another thing to remember, is that one pasture-raised chicken could have gotten 4 hours of sunlight outside grazing on the pasture, and another pasture-raised chicken could have gotten 8 hours. So it varies. That's why it's so important to dig deeper and not just look for that pasture-raised word, and to actually do the research on the brand that you're purchasing or the farm that you're purchasing from. And then the next category is regenerative. You guys may have heard of this. Well, if you've listened to our podcast, you've definitely heard of it before. But you may have also heard of this in reference to climate change mitigation and reversal of damage done so far with regards to climate change. It's a really hot topic right now. Lots of people, scientists, experts, social change advocates, environmentalists have been talking about regenerative agriculture as a solution for mitigating climate change and actually reversing climate change. So that's like a big argument in the environmentalist space, is like we're past the point of just doing no damage. Like we've already reached that threshold. We're already doing too much damage. Now it's time to actually reverse that damage and undo a lot of the harmful things that we have done. So regenerative agriculture is being talked about as a tool and a solution for this. And a lot of people question, you know, whether or not that's feasible and whether or not it's actually going to work. And something that I just want to mention before I get into what regenerative agriculture is that regenerative agriculture is not a new practice. It is not a novel innovation. It is not something that some genius just sat there and thought of. Some Elon Musk was like, oh, hey, why don't we try farming this way and we'll save the world? Like, no. That is not what we're talking about here. And I think that a lot of people get caught up in the movement of it and kind of push it as like this new innovation, when really it's not. It's an old indigenous practice. This is the way that indigenous people have been farming for millennia, like since human creation. This is the way that indigenous peoples have been farming. And I just want to point that out because we need to give credit where it's due. And we also need to remember that like, we're not trying to be innovative here. We're trying to actually get back to the basics and get back to the principles of agriculture that coincide with how nature intended for us to function as a society versus going against nature and industrializing everything. So regenerative agriculture is a land management philosophy. I like to use the term land management instead of farming, because I think that it It emphasizes that regenerative agriculture really focuses on managing the land, not focusing on generating a product. So that's like the main difference between regenerative agriculture and other types of agriculture, is that it's not focused on maximizing productivity and creating a bountiful harvest every single year. Yes, those are obviously like end goals of farming in general, because we want to produce good quality food in large amounts, but that's not the main focus of regenerative agriculture. The main focus is taking care of the land and giving back to the land, doing more for the land than you are extracting from it. So it considers the entire ecosystem, which includes consequences of farming to the environment and to the health of people, to the health of farm workers. It gives, again, more to the land than it extracts from it. And it just really views everything as like this interconnected web where animals, plants, insects, climate, humans, all of these things interact together in this interconnected web, versus looking at it as like a linear supply chain where it's like farms produce food, farms deliver food to people, people eat the food, and then you repeat the cycle. It views everything as one big living ecosystem, which is really how, again, nature intended for us to look at things before we as a society started to like compartmentalize everything and say like, oh, farming is over here, farmers farm, and we eat. And it's like actually viewing just everybody as like all people consume food. And so we're all affected by the food system. We're all affected by farming in some way. So there are like 5 main principles of regenerative agriculture. And again, regenerative agriculture is not a regulated term that has specific standards that farmers have to adhere to. So each farmer is going to do things a little bit differently, but there are like 5 principles that are pretty common among regenerative farmers. And there are organizations out there who are trying to get some kind of certification process so that consumers can feel more confident in their purchasing decisions and see a regenerative label and say like, I know for a fact this was grown with regenerative practices. But for now, we're not quite there yet. And that is why it's important for you as a consumer to kind of like know what these principles are, so that when you do go do your own research on a brand or on a farm, you know what to look for. So here are the 5 principles of regenerative agriculture. Number 1, integrate livestock. So before we industrialized and compartmentalized everything, animals actually played a role in growing crops. Now that is pretty much rare to see, unless it's in a regenerative setting, for animals to be integrated into crop production. Now with the conventional and industrialized way of things, we have animals in what's called concentrated animal feeding operations, or a feedlot. So basically that's a factory farm or a feedlot where there are a lot of animals in one confined space, usually not on pasture. They're usually in some sort of factory or warehouse confined to a designated space. This is obviously not normal, because again, before humans were created and before the Industrial Revolution, we didn't have systems in place to be able to do this. Animals walked among us, they grazed on the pasture. We had hunters and gatherers, and everything worked together in one ecosystem. And now we have taken animals out of that and put them in confined spaces and created an ecosystem that does not exist naturally. So that's not naturally how things work, obviously. And that is not how nature intended for things to be. So regenerative agriculture integrates livestock back into crop production and uses them to benefit the ecosystem. So one way in which they do that is something called rotational grazing. And this is where they will block off a section of pasture for, let's just say, cows in this example, to graze on. The cows will graze on that section of pasture, and then they will move them to another section of pasture. This prevents overgrazing, so that cows don't just run down the forage directly to the soil, because we don't want bare soil. We want plants growing constantly. So they will move cows to another section of pasture before the forage gets too low. So while cows are doing this, while they're grazing, they're also pooping. And as they walk around, their hooves are acting as little like massage agents just massaging their manure into the soil, which is really healthy for the soil and provides it with good quality organic matter, lots of rich nutrients and minerals. So it's the cows are benefiting the soil in that way, increasing soil fertility, and they're also helping out the farmer because they're grazing on the pasture, so the farmer does not have to use any type of like herbicide to kill weeds or things like that, because the cows are grazing on all of that. And like goats and sheep specifically, like, love weeds, are great for weeds. Chickens are great for pecking into the soil and eating bugs. So integrating animals back into cropping systems can basically give farmers like tools to do all these things without having to use chemical inputs. The second principle of regenerative agriculture is to maintain a living root. This is important because soil is a living ecosystem. Soil is something that needs constant nourishment, just like our own bodies. You might have heard in a previous episode of ours that there are actually more microbes in 1 teaspoon of soil than there are humans on the planet. That's a frick ton of microbes. And if you think about it as a living ecosystem, those microbes need food as well. They need food to break down into nutrients that then the soil can use to give back to the plant. So as long as there's a green living plant with a root underneath the ground, that plant is undergoing photosynthesis, and therefore it is recycling and storing nutrients, and it's also recycling and storing carbon. Carbon is a really big thing when it comes to climate change and global warming, as you probably know, CO2 in the atmosphere and emissions and all that kind of stuff. So that is kind of where regenerative agriculture ties into being a solution for climate change, is that because regenerative agriculture leaves plants in the ground year round and doesn't pull them up every year for a new harvest, those plants are constantly recycling carbon. They're actually able to pull carbon out of the atmosphere and store it in the soil. And that's where that reversal comes into play, because carbon sequestration, that's what this process is called, is one of the only ways that we can actually draw carbon out of the atmosphere. Like I said, it's not enough to just try to reduce emissions. It's important to reduce emissions and to not put more carbon into the atmosphere, but a lot of scientists and experts are saying, hey, we actually have to do something about all the carbon that's already hanging out in the atmosphere and causing a lot of damage. We have to remove that somehow. And regenerative agriculture is a really promising tool for this, to be able to actually draw carbon out of the atmosphere by using plants, by using something so simple, so natural. Having plants on the ground year round can actually draw that carbon out of the soil. So that's a huge goal of regenerative agriculture, is to maintain a living root. Leave those roots in the ground year round, allowing them to grow versus pulling them up and starting over each season. The conventional approach is typically to plow, plant, harvest, repeat. So every single cycle after harvest, that soil is tilled and plowed, and all of those roots are basically broken up and ripped up. Number three is to protect the soil. Again, soil is a living ecosystem, so regenerative agriculture really, really, really emphasizes that, emphasizes soil health, and says, like, if we don't have healthy soil, we don't have healthy plants. So one of the ways in which to make sure the soil is healthy is to protect it, meaning to cover it. Bare soil is never a good thing, never, because it leads to erosion and depletion. Bare soil is more susceptible to, you know, rain, runoff, wind, erosion, carrying the soil, topsoil away. So if the soil is left bare, it is more exposed to the natural elements and can easily be stripped away, versus having plants in the ground kind of protects it and keeps it covered. An example of this and how it affects our climate is in a really great documentary. We've mentioned it before. It's called Kiss the Ground. They basically show this little video of a global map of the world, and it shows, it's a heat map. So it shows like the different temperatures of the earth throughout the year. And what's really interesting about it is, and it shows it from kind of like the conventional agriculture cycle. So like I said, the plow, plant, harvest, repeat cycle. And it shows basically how our earth actually tends to warm up around the times of plowing and around the times of harvest. And if you think about it, what's happening when we're plowing and when we're harvesting? We're ripping up plants from the ground and we're leaving the soil exposed and bare. And during that time period, our earth is warming. And this map was showing the rising heat, the different changes in color. So it's getting more red during plowing and during harvest season because we're ripping up all the plants from the ground. Versus during planting season, the temperatures globally tend to drop because we're seeing plants that are covering the ground, drawing that carbon out of the atmosphere and storing it in the soil. So it's reducing that overall temperature in the atmosphere. So it that map kind of proved the power of plants to reduce our global temperatures and draw carbon out of the atmosphere. It's just like a really, really cool visualization. Highly recommend going to watch that because it was very eye-opening and like really connected the dots for me between agriculture and global warming. So a solution to keeping the soil covered and never letting it be bare is planting a cover crop, because not every single crop that a farmer plants has to be harvestable. And cover crops are the perfect solution for that. It's basically a crop that's not meant to be consumed or harvested. It's just there to protect the soil and continue feeding it. Cover crops also prevent weeds from growing and pests from completely taking over. But cover crops are a great tool for farmers to cover their soil so that it's not left bare. So if they're not growing anything for harvest at that point in time, they can just use this cover crop to keep the soil covered. And I want to elaborate a little bit on how I said continue feeding it, because I think, again, we sometimes forget that soil is a living ecosystem and it needs food to, the microbes in the soil need food to survive. It would be like fasting yourself for a certain period of time each year. When we harvest and we don't keep any living root in the soil, we don't keep any living plant in the soil, we're basically fasting the soil. So how can we expect that soil to still be productive and still produce quality, good nutrient-dense food if we're ripping its food source away from it every so often and not replenishing it until the next planting season? So that is another way that cover crops can, like I said, continue to feed the soil, continue to help it to produce nutrients and stay healthy. Number four is to minimize disturbance. This is kind of more of like a general theme of regenerative agriculture, is like, let's try to have as little human interference as possible and like really just let nature take its course. So minimizing disturbance, the biggest way that regenerative agriculture does this is through no-till practices. So they do not plow, they don't till the soil. They try to use other practices to turn the soil and keep it active instead of tilling or using a plow, just because that can be really harsh and break up all of those living roots and also undo all of the hard work that the soil has done to create a really healthy environment. Something that I want to touch on with minimizing disturbance and kind of like limiting human interference, I think it's really important to remember that like the land, the earth, Mother Earth, she actually really doesn't need us. Like we've gotten to a point now as a society where she needs us because we've done so much damage and we're the only ones who can actually reverse that damage and help her out. But she never actually really needed us. We obviously need the earth and we need the land way, way, way more than she needs us. And so that is a huge, huge principle of regenerative agriculture, is like recognizing that we are not here to extract from the land. We're not here to disturb nature's peace and destroy everything and create our own convenient way of life. We're using the land in order to survive. And so we need to honor it in that way and say, how can I give back versus how can I extract? Number five is increase biodiversity. Nature does not like isolation. She actually prefers mutually beneficial relationships that help her to sustain herself. She likes to operate on her own. She is an independent, strong woman who don't need no man. Again, it is not normal to have only one crop or only one species growing on a single plot of land. This would be like you eating only one food every single meal for the rest of your life. Your nutrient intake would be terrible and your health would suffer. When you are driving through the countryside and you see a huge, vast field of corn, that is not normal. That does not normally occur in nature. Only since humans came around and decided to compartmentalize everything and maximize production and industrialize everything did we start to see monocropped fields with large amounts of the exact same plant. That is not normal. That is not how nature intended for things to be. She likes biodiversity. She likes for things to be growing together in harmony, not isolated, separated from each other. Different plants also mineralize different nutrients. So in order for the soil to be healthy and productive, we need to plant a diverse array of crops. It's the same thing for our own bodies, needing nutrient diversity and having a diverse amount of foods in our diets. So why do we need more regenerative farmers? The biggest reason is that regenerative farming is really one of the only ways of farming that is a rehabilitation approach. Like I said, we are past the point of simply do no harm, and we need to shift toward rehabilitation, reversal, and improvement of the land. We can't just stay level and stop doing harm to the land. We actually need to reverse a lot of the damage that we've done. And regenerative agriculture is one of the only farming systems that focuses on rehabilitation. It's not enough to just reduce emissions anymore. We have to reverse the damage. This has been made very, very clear by scientists and experts who have said we only have 50 harvests left before our soils are so depleted and our land is so depleted that we can no longer grow our own food in soil. We're going to have to find another way to grow food if we don't figure it out before 50 harvests are up. That is like terrifying, honestly. It's terrifying, but it's also very empowering because it's like that sense of urgency to like, okay, we need to get this shit figured out right now. There are lots of scientists, farmers, experts out there who are really working to make sure that this can become more of the norm. But we also need consumers to be advocating for this type of farming, to be purchasing these types of foods in order for it to become the norm. So that is why I advocate for this type of farming and why I really encourage people to go do their research and to figure out a way that they can participate, even if it's just buying regenerative meats once a week. Like anything that you can do to contribute is helpful. I also want to take a moment to consider that 50% of Americans were farming in 1880. 50% of Americans were involved in farming back in 1880. And now, less than 2% of our nation is employed in agriculture. And from another perspective, in 1945, Americans grew 45% of their food in their own backyard gardens. And now, we only grow 0.1% of our food in our backyards. That is a huge change and a huge reason why we're so disconnected from our food, why we're so disconnected from the food system. And we don't know where food comes from because we aren't the ones growing it anymore. We've compartmentalized everything. We've said the farmers do that. We don't do that. But really, we all need food to survive. So why not all be a part of the food system? Why would you not be a part of a system that you need in order to survive? So regenerative agriculture also tries to empower people to be able to grow their own food right in their backyard. You don't need a huge plot of land and all these resources, a freaking tractor and a plow to go grow your own food. You can do it right in your backyard. Like nature intended for us to function as a society, as hunters and gatherers, you can go grow food right in your own backyard. So that's also a big part of regenerative agriculture, is that like empowerment aspect of getting back to the basics and getting back to being our own best advocates. So what do you look for when you're shopping? How do you know what's what and what to purchase if you are looking for better quality food? Let's start with organic because it's the only one that's regulated by the USDA or FDA, so it has the most concrete standards. Again, go listen to our organic episode if you want to know more specifically about it, but the USDA organic seal, that green and white seal that says USDA organic, that is the only way to ensure that something is 100% organic. Just the word organic on the front of the package does not mean that every single ingredient in that food is organic. There's lots of loopholes and different definitions for the word organic. So the only way, I explain all those definitions in that episode, but the only way to ensure that something is 100% organic is to look for that USDA organic seal. For produce, you can also look at the barcode. If the number on the barcode starts with a 9, that is an organic food. If it starts with an 8, that is a genetically modified food. And if it starts with a 3 or a 4, that is a conventionally grown food. So you can look at those numbers on the barcode as well, because I know sometimes grocery stores don't always have like a designated organic section. Or sometimes it can be a little confusing. Things are mixed together. So you can also look at the number on the barcode. You might see the terms pasture raised and regenerative on a label, but these are not regulated terms. Does that mean that they're meaningless? No. If you've listened to our podcast before, you know that we pretty much believe that the regulated definitions and regulated standards are kind of bullshit. If you haven't listened to our episode with Health Illy, we talk all about the FDA and why we think a lot of the things that they approve and regulate are just kind of worthless. So just because these terms aren't regulated doesn't mean that they're meaningless terms. Does it mean that they guarantee quality? Also no. So that's kind of the flip side of it, is these terms are not, they're not regulated, so you really don't know for sure what you're getting. But you also as a consumer, if you are educated on these types of farming, it gives you at least a starting point to say, okay, let me research this brand and see if they actually are pasture-raised or if they're actually regenerative. Hopefully in the future, we will have some sort of system where consumers can actually verify that that is how the food was grown. But you have to be willing to dig deeper. That's the bigger picture of all this, is you have to be willing to dig deeper. How do you dig deeper when you see a pasture-raised label or a regenerative label? One, research the brand or the farm. Look it up. What to look for. Do they address soil health? Do they advocate for carbon sequestration? Do they use cover crops? Do they use compost? Do they use no-till practices? Do they use rotational grazing? Do they address human health? Do they address the health of farm workers? All these questions can also be asked at your farmer's market. Just because a food is being sold at a farmer's market does not mean that it was grown in a regenerative way, even in an organic way. Just because it's at the farmer's market does not mean that it was grown in a quality way that considers the entire ecosystem. Farmer's markets do not equal high quality automatically. It's still important to be asking farmers those questions, building a relationship with your farmer. And if they don't have the answers, then it's probably not the operation for you. The second thing to note is that location does not mean local. If you flip over the back of a meat package and you see San Antonio, Texas as the location, that does not mean that that meat was born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in San Antonio, Texas. That just means that San Antonio, Texas was the last location that that product came from. So if you're wanting to buy more local, you're going to need to find farmers near you to ensure that it's actually a local product. How can you find a local regenerative farmer near you? There's this really cool tool by Regeneration International. I'll link it in the show notes, but it's basically a map of a bunch of regenerative farmers that they have vetted through their process, where they look at different practices that these farmers use and say, okay, you practice regenerative principles, and they'll add them to their location map. You'd be surprised at how many there are. Like there's one around you, I promise. If you go look at the map, you will find one that is within a reasonable distance from you. And that is just one way that you can locate a vetted regenerative farmer near you. They also have just a ton of information on their website about regenerative farming, about how to get more involved in the movement and whatnot. So I will link them, and I will link that map so that you can find one near you. There's like 12 within reasonable driving distance of me. I was shocked. How to follow up. Watch the Kiss the Ground documentary. We've talked about it before. It's literally one of my favorite movies ever. I'll link that as well. Farmer's Footprint. They are a great resource to follow on social media. They also have a short film that is amazing. It's like 20 minutes. Great place to start, with Dr. Zach Bush, who talks all about the importance of soil health, how it impacts human health. He is so intelligent, talks about these topics in such an articulate manner. I just really love him and think that he's a great resource to know and to follow. So I'll link that as well. And then also he was featured on Heal Thyself, which is a podcast by Dr. Christian Gonzalez, who we also love, where he talks about how depleted soils are the number one threat to our species. So he's the one who talks about that whole like 50 harvests left and like the sense of urgency around all of this. That episode was extremely empowering and just really opened my eyes again to how serious this is and how much we really need to get behind this as a society. So I will link that podcast episode as well, because it's a really good one. So there's just a few ways that you can learn a little bit more about this and get more involved. But I hope that kind of cleared up the different types of farming, the differences between all of them, and why we think regenerative is the best. Regenerative is also the least accessible right now, because a lot of people speculate whether or not it is the right way to do things, whether or not we can scale it and feed a bunch of people with it. But we have to also remember that, like, again, this is not a new innovation, a new practice. This is the way that things were done for centuries before we became an industrialized, developed nation. And so it is doable. We just have more people on the planet now. That's the issue, is we have more people on the planet now to feed, and people don't know if this can actually, like, how do we go back to something so simple and so basic when we are so far away from that now? And that's totally a, like, valid question and something to consider. But I think we have to remember that it starts in our own backyards. Like I said, plant something in your own backyard. Even it, like, literally just one plant, just know that that plant is continuously recycling carbon from the atmosphere. You are at least doing a little bit of something to reduce global warming by planting something in your backyard. You're also getting more connected to your food system by doing that. So it starts with us. It starts with the consumers who actually care enough to purchase these products, but also care enough to take the extra step to be a part of the food system and get involved and actually plant something themselves, or visit a regenerative farm and volunteer, or just contribute in some additional way besides just purchasing food, because that's something that we do on an everyday basis. That's a great place to start, but taking that extra step is really going to, like, really get the movement going. So hope that clarified the differences between the types of farming systems. Hope that clarified, maybe gave you a little bit more insight into which type you might want to be purchasing. Understand that everyone can only do what is within their means. So, like I said, if that means purchasing regenerative meat once a week and planting something in your backyard, do that. That's better than doing nothing. Whatever you can do is a positive contribution. So let me know if you guys have any additional questions. My DMs are always open. You can DM us on Wellness Digest Pod. You can submit a question through Anchor at our website. And we look forward to chatting with you next week. Liv and I will be back together and chatting about how to support your immune system during cold and flu season as winter approaches. So stay tuned for that. And we'll see you next week.